You are listening to From the Margins on CHSR 97.9.
Infinity.
Aggressive state intervention into the local labor movement that ensures that the radical labor movements are marginal.
What they're looking for now is less to get elected and more to come to the favorable attention of capital.
For the first time in history, we have a movement in this country led by indigenous peoples and most importantly indigenous women.
Repeatedly we've seen the attempt to criminalize black victims, to do anything to smear their names, to basically imply that black life isn't worth anything.
Our society teaches women to be ashamed of their bodies, to hate their bodies, to change their bodies.
We see increasing organized repression.
I'm stubborn. I'm not going to back down. This could go on for years and years and years.
People need to realize what side of the struggle that they're on.
The police, of course, want you to believe that there's some kind of criminal reason behind this.
Take every day as an act of resistance, whether it was a strike, a riot, or whatever.
It's very difficult for people to engage in sustained dissent. I don't believe it's impossible, though.
And welcome to another wonderful episode of From the Margins. And I'm here today with a couple of people, with my new co-host, Cody Jack.
Hello, how's it going?
All right, and we're going to have a guest today, Abram Lutz. How are you doing? All right, so today on the show, action-packed, we've got a couple of big items. First up is going to be students supporting the strikes Fredericton. So UNB and St. Thomas students who are finding ways to support upcoming strikes or ongoing strikes that are going on that should be of concern to students. And then second, we have Julien Renaud, who's a student representative to the Board of Governors, who we talked to, me and Cody talked to yesterday, about some things going on in the Board of Governors that students might want to be aware of because it's going to concern us all. All right, so why don't we get started, Abram? Cody, do you want to get started on this?
Hey, Abram, I was just wondering if you could let us know what organization you're a part of and why you chose to actually start this Facebook page.
Well, right now I'm not really formally associated with any organization, although I'd like to get more integrated with the activist community in Fredericton, and I'm sure a lot of other students do too. I'll be the first to say that students supporting the strikes isn't a big thing right now. My partner and I created the Facebook page, and we basically just reached out to friends at St. Thomas and UNB who we thought would already be interested in this sort of thing, and we used the Facebook page to disseminate information, especially about the Covered Bridge chip strike and the transit workers who have voted to strike. A few of us volunteer with the Labor Council distributing leaflets at places like the Market or at Sobeys and things like that. But we're hoping to be able to do more in the future.
All right. So first off, something really general. Why is it important for students to be concerned about workers?
I think it's almost like students need to know what they're getting into, if that makes any sense. With the way the Canadian and the world economy is going, and with the policies that are coming out of our provincial and our federal governments, there's a distinct possibility that students could land in any sort of job. And that job might be precarious, it might be non-unionized, there's all sorts of difficulties that students will encounter once they graduate. And I think also many students have to work through universities to support themselves and support their education, so they are already sort of part of the workers' community in Canada.
So you've admitted humbly that it's only just started out as a Facebook page, but do you hope to move and grow in a different direction, or is it mainly information and kind of social media that you think will be your strength?
Well, right now it's just information, and I think that's been relatively effective. But yeah, I would like to see it grow personally, and I've talked to other students who are also supportive, and I think that's the general sentiment, that we need some sort of student body organization that is explicitly pro-worker and pro-community and pro-people, if you will.
First off, to the Covered Bridge workers, so the Covered Bridge workers are currently on strike at their plant in Heartland. And I'm wondering about what is the connection between Covered Bridge workers in particular and UNB?
Well, for my partner and I, it was actually very personal. We're from the area. My mother works at the hospital across the street, so the people who work at the Covered Bridge Chips Factory are our neighbors, in essence. In the case of UNB, Covered Bridge Chips are sold at UNB campus restaurants. In the Harry Irving Library, you can buy them. And, sorry, library. But a big part of the strike is this campaign to get consumers to not buy the chips until the strike is over. That puts a bit more pressure on their boss to comply with their strike demands. And so that's something students can easily do. They see a bag of Covered Bridge chips and they just decide not to buy it. And that adds to the mounting pressure, I guess.
And what is the chance that UNB will pull these chips? Are there other examples of campuses that have done this?
Yes. The MUN Students Union recently decided that they would be recalling the chips from the campus, which I think is an amazing decision. We celebrated it on our Facebook page. So I think there's definitely, if the pressure is there, that we could try to make our student union do something similar, and I think that would be very beneficial.
All right.
Do you, on now moving on to the transit union or the possible transit union strike, where do you see students and specifically with the drivers on that one?
Well, I think this strike is very crucial because students will be interacting with its effects on an everyday basis. And I think it's easy for students and workers, the transit workers, to become divided because a lot of students do rely on the transit system. And I think there's a possibility that many students may blame the workers for the inconvenience. So I think it's important to have student support there so that the conversation is directed about the condition of workers in the transit system and about how inequality or unfairness or any sort of inefficiency in the transit system that doesn't benefit people is damaging to all of us.
And touching on that as well, Fredericton Transit has a ridership problem in that it has low ridership relative to the other jurisdictions that are it's being compared to. Do you see this strike as being a part of a larger conversation about transit within Fredericton?
I think absolutely. Our North American developed society especially is heavily relied on automobiles and highways and things like that. And of course those have their uses, but as those become unsustainable with CO2 emissions and things like cars are very expensive for low-income people, I think we do need to start a conversation about making transit more accessible, more affordable, and a more pleasant experience, if you will, so that more people make use of it.
And how do you feel about the fact that UNB, as opposed to STU, does not have a U-card system and that students at UNB do not have a bus pass with their tuition?
I don't like it, frankly. I think it's important to make sure that students have access to those things, and I think St. Thomas has done a good job of doing that. And there's plenty of other universities that do it too. And UNB is a big school, so I'm sure they could find the funding somewhere if they were so inclined.
That's following up on that. If they were so inclined, so you feel that it's definitely possible for UNB to do this. They're just not doing it, basically?
Yeah, I think so. I think that in terms of there's a combination of the universities in general becoming more bureaucratic and business-oriented, and then in UNB specifically, there's a lot less political willpower than on some other universities to have campaigns for these things. So hopefully there will be an increased awareness through these strikes and through the conversations we can have about these strikes. So hopefully we'll be able to push the university to consider those student needs.
So, I mean, when it comes to the transit workers specifically, they're not currently on strike, but I think everyone is expecting it's going to be one from the way the conversation is going. So there's still a bit of time, it would appear, before any mobilizing would need to happen. But what do you anticipate for mobilizing students, or what sort of tactics would you propose?
Well, I actually, I wasn't sure what to do, so I asked a friend who's had experience with working with transit workers in Toronto, and he said that they organize something called a flying squad, which is sort of an on-call strike support. So we're, when you work in transit, it's hard to develop a clear picket line as you don't have a centralized location where you work. So the flying squad sort of moves with the transit workers wherever their strike is going. And I think that sort of emphasizes the importance of being able to get around in a fair and just way. And I think that'll also be effective in demonstrating the level of support and forging new commitments between the workers and the students.
So what about... I'm guessing you're anticipating that there might be many students who will be not in support of the transit workers and who will be perhaps having some animosity towards them and blaming them for the strike. Do you have any ideas on how to respond to these students?
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And even the students who have been very supportive of the strike were initially very hesitant, and I understand that. I think that's a normal response. I mean, inconvenience is not fun, especially when you have big tuition payments and all these other concerns. So I think it's important to say that, yes, the student concerns matter. We do need better transit. We need transit to be accessible and convenient, but also disseminate information that in the immediate context, it's important to important to support the workers rather than focusing just on the student issue. But I do think the student issue, we can make it a part of that conversation. And I think maybe leafleting and maybe a few sit-ins or teach-ins just to give people an opportunity to talk about how to connect those.
And as UMB in some ways is now ramping up itself for strike situations, the UGSW, yes, the Graduate Student Workers Union, recently just said they were going to have a strike vote. Do you see, or are you hoping, well, maybe not hoping, but are you looking to expand and do things more involved on strikes or collective bargaining agreements or anything involving that on campus and within the community as well?
I think so. I'd have to talk to other people involved, but I personally would be very excited about that. I think the graduate students are in a very important position with this, because I think if the graduate students do go on strike or put any sort of pressure on the university, it'll become more evident that this is kind of a collective process and a collective struggle, and it's not just transit workers, it's not just CHIPS workers, it's not just graduate students. This is there are common issues and there are common concerns, and there's a common tactic to address those concerns.
Yeah, so it looks like in the picture ahead, there could be a lot of job actions coming up. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you're a student and have been having a conversation among some students about how to go about on expanding the idea of solidarity between students and workers. Mm-hmm. But what about the workers on campus, about the faculty and the other bodies of workers? Have you already started communication between these other parts of the university?
Mm-hmm. Where I'm not an experienced organizer, so we haven't really had the opportunity to do that, but I would certainly hope so. I think it's important to get some sort of permanent and solid sort of mobilizing committee, so to have sort of a set place where people can go and gather the resources they need to do that organizing. I think that's important, and I think we need to take the initiative as students to kind of set up those regular meetings and those regular discussions so that we can be more effective that way. Because right now it is very sort of disconnected and decentralized. Even though we can see the connections and the importance and the significance, there needs to be a level of structure in our organization to make sure that that those goals can be accomplished.
And touching on the fact that you said you volunteered with the FDLC, the Fredericton District mm-hmm. Labor Council, have you seen in some ways a reciprocity of the solidarity? So we often hear students talking about solidarity with workers, but do you feel there's that reciprocity with workers and fellow students?
I definitely see that. I've had a lot of positive experiences. The first leafleting trip I did with my partner, we were at the market, so we grabbed schnitzel and pizza and all those other things, and then the the leaflers met us at the end of the market, and we started handing things out to customers and things like that, having conversations about the different demands. And then the garbage workers would come by and they'd say hi and they'd ask how we were doing and they'd let us know, you know, they'd let us know that, like, this place is relatively clear if you want to go in and warm up. So there was definitely a level of individual to individual solidarity, but I've had experiences like that every time I've been out leafleting. So I think that's a common trend that can be turned into a collective action and collective conversation.
So where things are at right now, it's a Facebook group, so it's just at the level of trying to network with people. So the actual pieces putting in place to organizing itself is something that you're still looking ahead to. So what do you have any plans for trying to turn what's now just a way of communicating into actual organization?
Well, I was talking to a friend about this a night ago who has been involved in the volunteering and working with the FDLC. And we thought the first thing we should do is create some sort of a ledger of contacts with students we know would be interested in. So then we can see what kind of numbers we have, because that will be a very important aspect. And then see if we can have a space to meet with those people and reach out to them and have a set date and sit down in some format and talk about having some sort of statement as a group, maybe having a more permanent sounding name, things like that, so that we can have institutions, I don't know if that's the right word, to an extent that people know where to go if we need to mobilize around any specific strike or action.
And what about how to contact? Like right now, it's a Facebook group.
You can message the Facebook page. You can message me on Facebook, Abram Lutz, or my partner Jenna Lloyd. And then we have a few other friends, if you know them, and they've been posting regularly on Facebook in support of the strike and things like that.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Abram, for telling us about this.
Yes, thanks for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And, I mean, the next thing we're going to do on the show is going to be also about UNB. It's going to be about the Board of Governors and student representation and why students maybe should have more control and power within that institution and within the whole university. So feel free to stick around, and with the time we have remaining, we can talk about these issues as well. So did you, Cody, have a song you wanted to put in before we go to our next piece?
Yeah, so the song we're going to be doing is Strange Arithmetic by The Coup.
Always good.
Nice.
History has taught me some strange arithmetic. Using swords, prison bars, and pistols. English is the art of bombing towns while assuring that you really only bless the ground. Science is the honor book, beautiful study where you contort the molecules and then you make that money. In mathematics, dead children don't get at it, but they count the cost of bullets coming out the automatic. And I'm teaching, my hands up, please don't make me a bitch. Teach, stand up, you need to tell us how to flip this system. Symphony of hunger and theft. Mortar shells often echo out the cashing of checks. In geography classes, borders, mountains, and rivers, but they will never show the line between the takers and givers. Algebra is that unique occasion in which a school can say that there should be a balanced equation. And then statistics is the tool of the complicit, that everybody's with it, and you're the only critic. And I'm teaching, my hands up. Please don't make me a victim. Tell us how to flip this system. Teach, my hands up. Please don't make me a victim. Teach. studies is the Goliath to tackle, which turns into a sermon on simplicity of shackles. Physics is the school you own, a science of force, except for how to get the fuck out the ghetto, of course. Home ec can teach you how to make a few sauces and accept low pay from your Walmart bosses. If your school won't teach you how to fight for what's needed, they're teaching you to go through life and get cheated. And I'm teacher, my hands up, please. Don't make me a victim. Teach us, stand up. You need to tell us how to flip this system. Teach us, my hands up. Please, don't make me a victim. Teach us, stand up. You need to tell us how to flip this system, bro.
Right, that's a good tune, I must say. All right, next up on the show, we're going to have Julian Renaud, who's a student representative on the UNB Board of Governors. And we're going to be talking about, me and Cody talked to him yesterday, talked about a bunch of issues coming up at the next Board of Governors meeting on February the 18th, and just some concerns he has and some proposed motions. This is that.
My name is Julian Renaud. I'm the elected student representative on the Board of Governors for UNB, and I've also been elected to the UNB Senate. I'm a second-year law school student.
So, Julian, I was wondering if you could talk about a little bit what you see your role in terms of being a student Board of Governors member is and what you bring to that.
I think it's very important for the Board of Governors to have a diversity of ideas. And student representatives like me help to bring the student perspective on university governance issues. You know, I feel without myself and the other student representatives, the board discourse would be dominated primarily by ideas that have come from private industry, because the majority of people on the board were people who were in high up positions in industry.
Could you just inform me as to how many students are actually on the Board of Governors in terms of the general makeup of the BOG?
There are two student elected members of the Board of Governors from Fredericton and one from the St. John campus.
And in terms of what your role is, do you see yourself as more being elected in a representative role? So you've been chosen and therefore you're more of a representative of a student interest, or do you actively seek the engagement of your constituency?
I see myself as having constituents. I was elected by the students to serve their interests and certainly to bring that perspective to the table. Now, the argument has been made at board that all members, even elected student members, should make decisions in the best interest of the university, you know, whatever that means. I mean, we can debate till the end of time exactly what that means. Some on the board have suggested, not the student members, of course, but some other members have suggested that students don't owe anything to the student body. And I disagree wholeheartedly with that idea. I think that students have a tremendous stake in how the university is run and deserve to have their voice heard. And for that reason, I advocate for matters that are in the best interests of students. And generally, what's in the best interests of students will serve the university as a whole.
So there's an upcoming Board of Governors meeting.
February 18th.
Okay, and at this meeting, you've told us that you're going to be presenting three motions. Would you like to talk about what these motions are and why you're bringing them up?
there are some fundamental things in the way the board is run that, frankly, need to be changed. So the first motion I'm going to present will make a slight change in the board rules of order. So Section 5 of the board rules of order indicates that any documents relating to something that we're going to vote on should be in the hands of board members at least 2 days prior to the vote. And now, the word they use is should, so it's not required. And the general practice of the board is often that documents won't be in board members' hands until the meeting itself. So board members won't have the time to analyze them, reflect on them, consult with other people, do some research to make sure that the numbers add up. And I think that's unacceptable because we're making multi-million dollar decisions that have a tremendous influence on how the university is run and on its prosperity and effectiveness as a university. And we need time to think about these decisions before we make them. So I'm going to propose that we make that 2-day notice period mandatory and that no votes will be taken on matters that haven't had the documents disclosed to the board at least 2 days in advance unless we declare that a state of emergency exists.
What is the benefit to anyone, any particular members of the board, any particular groups of such a late delivery of information that's so important? Like, how does that work right now for the university?
Frankly, it makes it easier for people to ram things through the board that might not hold up under scrutiny. And I've seen that happen before where there are some things that have gone through the board and have later drawn significant criticism, but only after the votes have been taken. It seems to benefit the administration the most because a lot of these proposals come from senior administrators, the vice presidents usually, for doing various things with allocation of funds. The YUNB campaign, for instance.
I guess as well, an interesting aspect about the time reference, as you mentioned, the ability to actually consult, but are you able to, in fact, due to the closed nature of most of your meetings, actually consult with people about the information you receive?
Of course, we can speak to other board members and certain administrators who are present at board meetings about the issues. And anything that happens in open session of board, we're allowed to talk about. Or things that happen to both board and Senate, which quite a few things go through both bodies, because Senate meetings are open, so we're allowed to talk about that too. But certain things that happen in closed or in-camera sessions of the board, we're not allowed to discuss. Most of the time, I find that it's not too stifling simply because what's discussed in closed and in-camera sessions is usually just elaborating upon what's discussed in open sessions or in other venues, like at the President's State of the University address. There are times when it could be a problem where things are only discussed in closed session, but most of the time, and for our purposes today, I'm able to speak quite openly about the issues that we're concerned about.
So there's a couple of other motions that you're going to be bringing up on February 18th, both having to do with transparency. Would you like to break these down?
Yes. So the first motion for transparency will require the university to disclose certain documents on its website that currently it only discloses if someone like the CBC or another media organization requests these documents through the Right to Information and Protection of Privacy Act. There are a lot of reasons to do this. One is that the university spends a lot of time and a lot of money dealing with these Right to Information requests right now. Staff spend a lot of time putting these documents together, and also legal fees. For instance, about $60,000 a year is spent on legal fees related to Right to Information requests. The first problem with not disclosing these documents by default on the university website is that it costs us, it costs the university a lot of money and is just totally wasted money. And the second issue is that, if we become more transparent and put these documents on the website, then the university community will be able to see them and assess whether the university is going in the right direction. And it will improve relations between the administration, faculty, and students, because right now and at various times, like especially during the faculty strike, there's been a lot of distrust. And by becoming more transparent, it will help to mend those relations.
Your third motion on transparency, well, your third motion overall, your second one on transparency, how documents need to be disclosed to board members. There is a policy right now where not all board members can get access to these documents. Can you explain this one?
Yes. So the Board of Governors right now is so opaque sometimes that it won't even disclose documents to other board members by default. So suppose there are some documents that were dealt with by the Executive Compensation Committee. I, as a regular board member, but one who's not on that committee, I've requested some of their documents just to review them and see what kind of decisions they're making. And they've refused to disclose some documents to me. But they've said, we'll give you those documents, but only if you submit a rights information request, which is kind of silly because that will just cost the university more money and time. Why wouldn't they disclose it to me? There's no legal reason why they wouldn't disclose these documents to board members. Because while some of the documents that committees deal with are of a confidential nature, they're confidential to the board. I mean, I couldn't just go out and release these documents unredacted to the general public. But board members are the body that, for example, hires staff. So suppose there's confidential staff issues. Any of the board members should have access to those documents because the Executive Compensation Committee is only exercising authority that the board as a whole has delegated to it. The argument of those in the administration who have said that we're not going to disclose these documents to anyone who's not on that committee is that the committee is somehow separate from the Board of Governors, but it's not. It's just a subcommittee that we've given authority to. So, and that committee is answerable to the board as a whole for its actions. I think it's an unhealthy and dysfunctional model for there to be multiple groups within the board all keeping secrets from each other.
And you had mentioned as well earlier in conversation about how you, as particularly a student Board of Governor members, were being treated in a way that was different compared to the other members. Could you maybe elaborate on that a bit?
The way that the board committee terms of reference have been interpreted by the administration, they've interpreted them so that student members of the board are not eligible for a number of different committees and positions. So, for example, the advancement committee, which I sit on, explicitly says that a student board member shall be one of the members. But then if you look at the executive committee or executive compensation committee, it'll say, you know, certain board members will sit on this committee, but it doesn't explicitly say that a student shall sit on these committees. The way the administration has interpreted that has been, if it doesn't explicitly say that a student will be on the committee, a student will not be on the committee. So if it says, for example, five board members will be voting members of this committee, I interpret that to mean the board members could be any one of the board members. But the administration has taken a very different interpretation of that. So that's another one of the issues we're going to deal with. I even said this to the board vice chair a little while ago. I said when I was elected to the Board of Governors, it was on the understanding and under the impression that I would be a full-fledged member of the board there to represent student interests. And now I get here, and I seem to have been relegated to the kids' table. And I don't think that's fair to students or in the best interest of good governance of the university.
Is there a member of the administrative executive on each of these committees?
Generally speaking, yes. Sometimes several. For example, the vice president will sit on these committees. The president is often on a lot of these committees that that students are excluded from.
If there's members of this UNB administrative executive on each committee, is there a concern that effectively a lot of the decisions are actually being made by members of the executive administration of the university rather than by the board as a whole?
There's no particular committee that administration members could technically dominate with votes, but that's not the issue that I find. What I find is that administrative staff have an uncanny ability to get board members on their side and push things through the board. Even though they don't have votes themselves, they don't need them. I find that there's enough people there who will do whatever the administration asks them to do.
Moving on to a couple of the issues that have come out in the student press this past year, one of them being the YUNB campaign. I was wondering if you could reflect on, well, first off, what is this campaign, and what has happened to this campaign?
Yes, so the YUNB campaign has been the administration's response to declining student enrollment, which is driven mainly by two things. One, a shift in demographics, fewer people going to university, and two, a conversion rate problem. So conversion rate is the percentage of students who are sent an acceptance letter to get into UNB who actually come. So suppose half of all the students that got acceptance letters came to UNB, we would have a 50% conversion rate. The thing about the YUNB campaign is that it's aimed primarily at increasing the number of applications for UNB and not so much the conversion rate, when we acknowledge at the Senate level anyway that the conversion rate's the real problem. So this YUNB campaign was approved in May for a $5 million expenditure over the ensuing year. And before that, it had been approved for $1.8 million. And I suspect that Vice President Skillen, who's in charge of the YUNB campaign, will be asking us for more money again soon within the next couple of board meetings. And the plan for the YUNB campaign that has been presented both to the board and to the Senate indicates that over the life of the campaign, approximately $30 million of university money will be spent on it over 8 years. The projections suggest, coming from Vice President Skillen, that that money will more than be made up in extra number of students who have come as a result of the campaign. I and many others are very skeptical that that will actually happen for a number of reasons. If we do have an increase in the number of students here, it'll be hard to trace it back to the campaign. Second of all, we might not have an increase in students. We might have a further decrease in the number of students. And third, the financial projections provided by Vice President Skillen don't take into account the fact that as you increase the number of students at the university, you're also going to have increased costs. Financially, I am extremely skeptical that this campaign is in the university's best interests, especially considering that money that we're spending on this campaign is money that we're spending in lieu on marketing, in lieu of spending it on the academy, on things that will improve the quality of teaching and research here at the university, you know, fulfilling the university's actual mission. It's a very top-down managerial approach to the problem. And frankly, the Senate has had, and various faculties have had, much better proposals to, address the conversion rate problem and get more students to UNB.
Talking about that, there's an example in the United States with the University of Oregon where they have recently switched from a branding campaign towards taking that money and putting it back into the academy or back into teaching positions. Are you familiar with this, and could you kind of elaborate on your thoughts about that?
I am, yes. One of the faculty here at the university pointed me in the direction of this article because it shows a university, the University of Oregon, which was in exactly the same position that we at UNB are in right now. They had the choice of spending money either on a branding campaign, their equivalent to the YUNB campaign, or they could spend it on academics, and they chose academics. This article in question was published in the Chronicle of Higher Education on January 14th, 2016. And the title is University of Oregon Cancels Branding Contract, Will Spend Money on Academics. And from what I've heard, they're very glad that they went in that direction. And I'm one of many who thinks that UNB should be going in that direction as well.
And in terms of the atmosphere on the Board of Governors, is there kind of a sentiment where some people hold this close to their heart?
I certainly hope that the board can be swayed to spend more money on the university's academic mission. Thus far, the Senate has been extremely critical of the campaign because there are faculties that have been somewhat neglected in terms of funding for the past while. And there are some people on the board, like myself, who are also quite skeptical of it. But there are some on the board who tend to agree with administrative staff. And the proof of that is, since 2008, the 2009 fiscal year, our administrative costs have increased by over $8 million, an increase of over 34%. And those numbers were put together by a mathematics professor here at UNB, Vlad Tasek, and he put together a spreadsheet from publicly available financial documents of UNB to show this. It's quite incredible how much the administration has ballooned. I don't think it's sustainable financially. I do not think that it's sustainable for us to keep on increasing the cost of the administration, especially now when we just put a hiring freeze in effect. The provincial government is saying that it might cut our unconditional grant by between 5 and 15%. You know, we need this money to spend on our academic mission.
And how does the growth in the size of the administration of the university, including the size of the cost of that administration, compare with enrollment over time?
That's a very interesting question. Enrollment has been going down, and the cost of the administration has been going up. And the cost of faculty has been going down because we've eliminated a lot of faculty positions through attrition. And I brought this up at board and asked, why is this happening? As our student body and our faculty complement shrink, the administration somehow grows. You know, I said, why? It seems completely out of whack. There seems to be a certain natural ratio between the three numbers, number of students, number of faculty, number of administrative staff, and that ratio has gone completely wonky. But I can see why that's been happening, because whenever the administration asks for something, they generally get it. When faculty ask for something, for example, when they're doing their contract negotiations, as we saw in the last contract negotiations, the administration was fighting tooth and nail to not give them what they were asking for. The natural result of that is that you end up with more administrative staff and fewer faculty and ultimately fewer students. Because students are going to see that the academy is not being funded the way it should, and that's going to discourage people from applying.
In terms of how people vote and how people, certain members, give the administration, so to speak, what they want, how available are the records of how particular board governors vote on these issues? Are votes made public, or is that something that is included in closed sessions that aren't accessible?
A lot of votes are taken in closed session. We're trying to get more things in open session and have more recorded votes. You know, there's a push from certain members of the board and myself to get things more open. But thus far, there's a lot of votes that are just not made public.
So to sum up our conversation and the direction that it's been going, I guess my question is to you, Juliana, where do you think we should go from here? Where do you think students should go? Where do you think faculty should go? And what are your plans moving forward?
So one thing that students can do is show up to board meetings, especially since now there's the push to hold the important parts of board meetings in open session. There's nothing preventing members of the public and students and faculty and so on from showing up and seeing the decisions get made. So the next board meeting will be on February 18th at 9:30 at the WU Center. And that's where I'll be presenting my three motions to make the board more transparent and to fix some of the governance issues. So, you know, you can see that happen. If you have any concerns about what's going on at the university, be it administration-related or related to academics, by all means get in touch with myself or one of the other elected student representatives. That's what we're here for.
On that note, how can students contact you?
You can contact me through my website. It's just julianrenaud.ca, JulianRenaud.ca. And I give out my personal phone number to students all the time. It's 476-8900. That's my cell phone, so you can get in touch with me that way anytime. And, yeah, my email is right there on my website, too. Or come see me in person if you know where to find me at the law school.
And maybe some people will take Julian up on his little sketch. Whoa, hold on a sec. What is that? Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, that was Julian Renaud. And he was talking about the situation going on with the Board of Governors concerns and the motions coming up. So if you want to check that piece out again, there was a lot of info in there that'll be going up on the From the Margins website. That's fromthemargins.h-a-z.org. And stick around for the rest of the show. Going to go to some more tunes. And then myself, Cody, and Abram will discuss that piece that we just heard, talk some more about the issue of how this university is run and maybe how it should be run. Okay, Cody, take it away. What do we got coming up next?
So now I'm still... So I'm still feeling the coup on this one, so we're going to go with the magic clap.
Come on, kids!
right. Magic clap the coup. All right, so we heard a lot about shenanigans in the Board of Governors, to put it in one way, about how this university is run and how the bureaucracy works to maybe subvert what theoretically could be a broader decision-making process. Any thoughts on this, what we just heard? Any suggestions on how this could be different?
Well, I think it's what Julian is doing as a representative is really good, and I commend him for it. And I think it's good that transparency and access to information are something that he's actually talking about in the board. I hope that his efforts are kind of met with a student response and a student action. So I hope that we can maybe coordinate and talk about that, because there's a lot of alternatives to run a university, and a lot of them have popped up right here in Canada with general assemblies or direct democracy campaigns in like Quebec and Ontario.
Can you think of any particular campuses that come to mind?
Oh, there's a lot. There's one that's starting up right now at Algonquin College. They're starting a campaign for sort of a direct democratic model for policy decisions at the university. They want submissions to be subject to referendums and stuff like that if enough students care about that issue. I'd have to look into more of the specifics of that, but during the peaks of the Quebec student strikes in 2012 and 2015, the students kind of formed general assemblies, and they made decisions that way. There's also a general assemblies campaign in Toronto, and those assemblies actually became permanent on a couple of campuses, and they're now part of the decision-making process.
And were you around, or were you aware, did you follow the AUNBT strike that happened here at UNB a couple of years ago, and what were your thoughts on that in this conversation?
So at that time, I worked at McDonald's, which seems unrelated, but I was very busy at that time. So I didn't follow it as much as I wanted to. But from what I did gather, the things that they were talking about then in terms of how the board makes decisions or how the university as an institution is structured, it's kind of similar concerns to what Julian brought up in his interview.
Yeah, the thing, for years, this has been an issue that has kept coming back to this radio show. It's something that I've talked about a lot with other people about just what the priorities are of the university and just how interesting it is that you have a university which is supposedly about education, but it's really about being a business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's really what it's turning more and more into. And students are customers, and that's everyone is serving those customers in different ways. The whole idea is to bring in as much money as possible, and that students are walking dollar signs. These are all concepts that have come up. And then, of course, there's a composition of the Board of Governors, just predominantly members of the private sector, and some really big shots, like parts of the Irving family and the McCain family. And what does that have to do with education? You know, just in the bigger picture. But it just goes to show, like, what when you're looking at the management structure of an organization, and that's who you see, that will reflect what is actually done.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what we're seeing. Cody?
In terms of another question to throw to you, in terms of, I mean, your topics are basically worker student solidarity, but do you see, because we talked about growing a large organization, a more institutionalized, but more permanent organization, do you see it as not just having this kind of singular aspect, but moving towards, now we're talking about governance of universities, governance of student bodies and stuff like that, do you see it moving and morphing into that as well?
Absolutely. I think to effectively make any kind of change, you can't talk about one issue or one event. Our society, things are cumulative. And so a lot of the issues, say, that graduate workers are striking about are probably similar to what Julian is having to deal with as a representative on the board. And so I think to actually make a solid criticism of what we have now, and then also say this is what we want in the future, we need to connect all those struggles and make it more generalized and mass-based.
Yeah, that I think that's where a lot of people are seeing things going. There's a campus labor council that has been formulated in the last few years, and I think it's a structure that is developmental, and the different unions on campus are all part of it, and the whole idea of it is to try and increase the coordination of activities on campus between unions to just make sure they're communicating with each other so they're up as far as their knowledge goes on what's coming up with regards to job actions, things like that, so they can possibly find ways to help each other out, be in support of each other if they know each other's timelines and that sort of thing. And it creates possibilities too beyond just being a body to share information and find out each other's schedules. It can actually be used for collective organizing theoretically.
And I think what you've been talking about touches on something that I think was learned during the AUNBT strike, which was that there was a failure on the part of students and to some extent the labor unions involved in terms of cross solidarity and stuff. Yeah. The student union took a neutral stance and said that we just need people to come back to the table. And that was seen, I think, because there was a large number of students that wanted to support the teachers and they were looking, I mean, the professors, and were looking for that, but they didn't get it. And so I think that things kind of fell by the wayside. And I think professors tried to reach out to students, but the narrow aspect of what they were doing, I think, kind of worked its way through, which was unfortunate, I think.
I think we're just about running out of time here. We were going to go to a final song, which we might hear 1 minute of now. But thanks, everyone, for listening today. And this show will be going up on the From the Margins site. It'll be posted on the Facebook page as well within the next 24 hours. So do check that out. Thanks for listening. What do we got coming up next?
We're going to go out with Sisters by A Tribe Called Red.